Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to share the latest on health and healing and what happens if you have dental amalgam mercury fillings. I'll give you a number of conditions you may not have been aware are directly related to those fillings. How do you get them out? How much does it cost? Who does that? Also today, we'll take a look at the latest research on light therapy to treat chronic pain. And we're also going to explore what happens when you want to get more of a nutrient absorbed into the body, like turmeric. How about 1,000% or more increase when you take something with it? And I'll tell you what that is. There's also good research on how potassium, when it's increased, can protect your heart from a heart attack if you've been on a high sodium diet. And if you're feeling weak, vitamin D3 improves muscle strength and more on health and healing. Then I'm going to be sharing a commentary from William D. Hartung from Tom Dispatch on what happens when all we have left is the Pentagon, and this is relating to the increase in our military budget. From John Stanton of Global Research, the digital storm blowing away the human mind. Monsanto's cancer lawsuit that most people are not aware of. Well, it took a dramatic turn over the EPA's officials' highly suspicious role. Echo Watch tells you about how someone inside the EPA was thought to be protecting Monsanto's interest and downgrading the significance of glyphosate as a cancer agent. Also, who is the biggest climate change villain? Jonathan Cook of Global Research tells us, and it'll surprise people, but then it makes sense. And the Amazon's deforestation rises as a corrupt government, moves to weaken indigenous protections. Also today, two very important conversations. One, with Crosstalk's White Helmets. Now, the other night, White Helmets won the short documentary for best of short documentary. And that meant that the Hollywood community that watched it supported it. And here's the problem. It was all a lie. We will call out the lies of the White Helmets. We will bring in people who have the truth, who've been to Syria, who've been to Aleppo, who have been there on the ground, who've done the homework, the research, real journalists, not those slanks hanging around Hollywood with a crew of mindless trolls who, oh, I don't watch the Academy Awards, I'm sorry, but that kind of pretentious, pompacious egotism is beyond my ability to tolerate. Everyone thinks so much of the air-kissing fools and the mock glamoury, and just give us the movies, we'll pay the money, but don't be on our face every 3 minutes mocking what it means to be real. Your roles are based upon your mastery of creating the believability of being real, and that's fine. There's an art to that. There's an entertainment value to it. There's even the ability to be moved by it. But then I happen to be one of those people who know a great deal about Hollywood, having written two very important best-selling books on it over 20 years and having two very close friends who were very important in Hollywood for over 30 years. So I got to see the other side of it. I got to see the highly competitive, selfish, narcissistic, insecure, drug-addled, do-anything-to-get-ahead side. So I'm not impressed by the Academy Awards. So we're going to have the real people on, telling you the truth about the White Helmets. Also today, we're going to have a CIA whistleblower speak out about climate engineering and some of the truth about the hidden hand, The government you do not see, do not know exists, but boy, they are alive and well. You'll be hearing from Kevin Shipp, S-H-I-P-P, addressing the crimes of the government today. Light and easy? Never. No, we're going to share a lot of intense information, but all of it meant to empower us, to make better choices and to know the truth. I can handle any negative as long as I can see it for what it is and I can find a solution to deal with it. Let's begin. From the University of Arizona, there's some new research talking about chronic pain and how there's a great deal of promise with light therapy. Now, chronic pain afflicts over 100 million people across the United States. It diminishes their productivity, the quality of life, and costs hundreds of billions of dollars each year to medically manage. And it shatters people's emotional well-being, and it tears apart families and claims lives through suicides and accidental drug overdoses. Also, it creates a great deal of opiate addiction. But now researchers at the University of Arizona have found promise in a novel, non-pharmacological approach to managing chronic pain, treating with green light-emitting diodes. And results of the study appear in the current issue of Pain. And in this study, they looked at the neuropathic pain, and they bathed that pain area in green light, and it showed far more tolerance to thermal and tactile stimulus. So that's good. But we've known about light therapy for a long time. It just hasn't been popular. Now, hopefully, it will be, because it's natural, non-toxic, and it works. Something else that works is turmeric, T-U-R-M-E-R-I-C. There are thousands of studies on this very important nutrient. And there is, I'm going to guess, at least 5,000 studies in the quality literature telling us about how it can make a difference in everything from heart disease to reversing or preventing cancer to turning off inflammation to improving our immune system and helping our body resist stress. It helps you if you're fatigued. It does all this. It's just wonderful. Here's the problem. Turmeric has been studied and has very low bioavailability. In lay language, that simply refers to the fact that your body cannot absorb it easily. And that's especially true with curcumin, the turmeric alkaloid that is most commonly given for medical conditions like cancer or hepatitis. Well, until recently, this issue was simply overlooked. You just took more of it, hoping that even though less is absorbed, if you take more, even the less becomes more to your body. Now they find that there is a better deliverability system that increases bioavailability. And it is something that's been used by taking vitamin C for a long time. It's called lysosomal delivery system. The liposomal, lipo, L-I-P-O, somal, S-O-M-A-L, means that you're attaching one molecule to another molecule for greater absorption. And here's why this is important, because the problem arises when you have turmeric alkaloids, which are water-soluble, and the cell membranes in your body are lipids, which means fats. So water-soluble substances can get in, but not as well, not as much. So if you have the liposomes, and those would be fat, then you get better absorption. So here's the takeaway message. When you have phospholipids, when you have, let's say, the omega-3 fatty acids, or olive oil, or coconut oil, taken at the same time as you're taking your curcumin or turmeric, you're going to have a greater bioavailability because the liposomal absorption will help the turmeric get into the cells. So it's good. Also, today, we have a new study from the University of Southern California showing that the higher dietary potassium is associated with reduced blood pressure, regardless of sodium intake. Now, you can't get a lot of people to lay off the salt. People seem to be having an addiction to salt. So instead of trying to tell them, get rid of the salt, which they're unlikely to do, though it's easy if you start using, for example, the best way of doing it is on some potatoes. Now, a lot of people like baked potatoes, and baked potatoes are healthy for you, as are roasted potatoes. But what you do is, if you lightly roast them but not till they're brown, normally people would put lots of salt on the potato. Instead, just squeeze lemon juice on. And lemon juice on a potato tastes like salt. Simple. So, but let's say that doesn't even work. Then what do you do? Increase potassium. This is according to the current American Journal of Physiology, Endocrinology, and Metabolism, noting that blood pressure is higher in westernized populations consuming sodium-rich processed foods versus isolated societies consuming potassium-rich natural foods. And they saw this huge correlation. Well, based upon multiple population studies, the researchers found that higher dietary potassium was associated with lower blood pressure, regardless of sodium intake. And that is really new. Quote from the study: the findings suggest that public health efforts directed towards increasing consumption of natural potassium-rich foods, there's your fruits, would reduce blood pressure and thus cardiovascular and kidney disease. How about that? And finally, from Creighton University, if you're feeling weak, vitamin D3 improves muscle strength. Age-associated decline in muscle function represents a significant problem for us today. And vitamin D deficiency is also prevalent in almost everyone over the age of 50. And that also begins the time when you're losing muscle mass and your strength. But new research just published in the journal PLOS shows specific forms of vitamin D3 specifically helps optimize muscle strength at 1,000. In fact, it says, quote, in the absence of vitamin D from sunlight, disease increases more than 1,000%. Experts suggest that the chances of getting vitamin D from your diet are very low. And if you're a vegetarian, it's all the more difficult to gain vitamin D. What they repeatedly suggest is exposure to sunlight is the best form of vitamin D. I would agree with that. And or take a supplement. That would help you tremendously. I did mention at the beginning I wanted to give some reasons why you should get the mercury dental fillings out. Because they lead to chronic disease. And we have a chronic disease epidemic now in the United States, which is related to our immune system. And dental amalgams contain a 54% ratio of a neurotoxin, mercury. And the National Institutes of Health, through an extensive epidemiological study, showed a high correlation between dental amalgam fillings and chronic disease. Yet the FDA and other health agencies refused to do anything about this huge public health risk. So what is likely to happen in your body if you don't get rid of those mercury fillings? Autoimmune disease. And that is linked to multiple sclerosis, ALS, which is Lou Gehrig's disease, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, muscle tremors, joint pain, muscle pain, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, and Crohn's disease, lupus, and endometriosis and diabetes. Neurological problems, neuropathy, and memory loss, ADD and epilepsy, autism and headaches, migraines and dizziness, vertigo, are all associated with mercury fillings. Mood disorders, anxiety, depression, insomnia, anger control issues, immune system dysfunction and cancer, immune problems like asthma, chemical sensitivity, skin conditions like eczema and psoriasis, sinus problems, cardiovascular conditions such as hypertension, angina, abnormal rapid heartbeat like tachycardia, stomach and digestive problems, hormonal imbalances like hypothyroidism, adrenal gland issues, Hashimoto's disease, hair loss, prostate issues, urinary problems, oral health also, and vision and hearing problems. So what do? It's simple. You go to a holistic dentist, and there are holistic dentists around the country, not many, but there are, and there's a holistic dental association. So Google holistic dental association. They will give you the list of the holistic dentists who've passed their exams and have generally taken the Hal Huggins protocols. He was the father of holistic dentistry and a very good man. I liked Hal, had him on my program a lot, even brought him up to one of our retreats in the Catskills to share that information with about 1,500 people who joined us that week. And they really liked what he had to say because we all have issues that we have to take care of, our oral hygiene, our gums. And he was the one who did the protocols and showed how to get the mercury out of the mouth in a safe way. And in New York, I have a holistic dentist. I go twice a year to have a complete examination, about once every 3 months, get your teeth really cleaned. And I suggest that you find the dentist living closest to you. If you're in Manhattan, there's one really good one, Elmira Gadol, G-A-D-O-L, over on Weston Avenue. But there are at least 10 others in the greater New York area. Find the one that is best for you. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. All the people in all the countries around the world and all the different syndicated stations, I welcome you to our program. We are having a problem with people communicating in the real world in real time, looking in your eyes and showing you some understanding of what it is to be a sentient being. Recently, I had a friend called, said that they were having some issues. Would I take a few moments to spend with him? I took 2 hours. During that two-hour period, they looked down and took texts or phone calls 22 times in 2 hours. At no time did they feel obliged to turn off their phone or to apologize. And then I saw this person's daughter, and the daughter was equally distracted, and it's a virtual reality for them. They had become so accustomed to communicating digitally that they were inept and simply unprepared to do it the old-fashioned way. Sit undistracted, look into a person's eyes, and share what you have to share. How did this come about? What are the likely outcomes? Well, one of the outcomes is we've lost the capacity for deep and methodical thinking. When you have to read an entire book, you have to read many articles in depth to fully understand the context of a particular issue or question, then you're developing the deep insights. But today, we don't want that. In fact, having published more than 700 articles and over 100 books, in fact, the longest book I'm aware of ever published on women's health, 1,600 pages. Nope, my regular publishers wouldn't publish it. Now, I published so many bestsellers. In fact, I have one of the 5 best-selling hardback books in history, $40 book, sold 1.4 million copies with no returns. That's a lot of books. That was a big book. And I remember when I gave my agent the manuscript, he said, no one's going to publish this. And I said, why not? He said, it's too big. you know, we're going now to small books. You should do a 200-page book, not a 1,600-page book. This is 8 books. I said, but there's always going to be people who will read. We're not all functionally illiterate. We're not all distracted. Yes, a lot of young people would have trouble reading one page. In fact, I actually talked to him about why don't I publish a book that's only one page long for the millennial generation and see how many could actually read the page without being distracted. And I'll bet half couldn't. And so we may get to the time when we have one page. And on the internet now, we have characters, very few. And so we begin to condition ourselves to read less. Well, by the way, that book became a bestseller. It was for women only. It sold 75,000 copies at $75, and yet my publisher decided not to publish it. Later, my agent said, wow, did they realize they made a mistake? That was just a hardback edition. So yes, there will always be people who want to have the quiet conversations, who don't want to go out to dinner with anyone who has a cell phone. When all my buddies and the women I know, we all go out together, maybe 12 of us, the rule is no cell phones, no distractions. You're here to share this moment with people. Enjoy these people in this moment. That's the rule. You can't handle that, don't come. And yet, how many parents have told their kids there's something called manners, there's social etiquette? We don't have manners or etiquette today. It simply doesn't exist in how it's, unless the parent themselves have it. But for the general population, it doesn't exist. So what we end up is we end up with people who have superficial understanding of just the talking points that they read, bulleted points that they've been given, an overwhelming amount of information, none of it qualified. Is it right? Is it wrong? Is it fake? Is it real? Is it subjective, objective? This simply does not exist in our vernacular. And so, we have now what John Statton calls the digital storm. And I would look at this as the new cocaine. The digital storm, though ultimately damaging, is stimulating. It rushes to find the nucleus, accumbulums, and floods it with dopamine, which the hippocampus, in turn, memorizes as rapid stimulus for satisfaction or pleasure. And the amygdala then records the event, making sure that the human response is conditioned to find pleasure and indeed to seek it out desperately. The brain reboots itself, and in so doing, it becomes conditioned. Addiction ensues, and brains and humans change, but sometimes to a point where we're not aware of it. We're not aware of how shallow most people are. We're not aware of how little scholarship exists within most human beings today because we're not held accountable for what we don't know. The digital storm forms a new brain and hence a new human character. Transmogrification becomes complete and the symptoms appear indicating that this is a form of de-evolution. We're actually reversing what we had gained. The addiction to the digital storm is so overwhelming that the brain creates a punishing craving. It's a mechanism, and it's connected to our insecurity. Its emotion is fear, the fear of not being connected, of being seen or taking part in a social scene. It's the fear of missing out on the daily online world and being missing in action to comment on the latest trivia. Everything is trivia. The images, the sounds, the photos. To eliminate connection insecurity, the brain creates an addiction that resembles the cocaine addiction frenzy when a person is going off the cocaine and needs another fix and will do anything, say anything, in order to get the fix. We now have a whole generation, in fact, two generations, that are engaged in trying to make sense of life when they do not have all the tools necessary to see life as it is. Think of the last time that you actually had someone sit patiently with you, quietly listening, and then asking or stating in some way what the nature of that conversation was. And then you begin to see, wow, we have lost our capacity for authentic conversation. It's kind of like the don't see me, don't touch me, just read me. You can see it in the mothers and fathers that push their infants, children down the sidewalk, talking into the cell phone rather than talking to the child. What does that child store in the brain? Gossip, recipes, sports, trivia? Or the family dinner table where adults and children feel compelled to check email or take calls, not wishing to be offline for 60 minutes for a Sunday dinner. And worse still, the dinner host have to remind the cell phone users to please silence your cell phones as if you were in a movie theater. And walking down the street, the ability to say good morning or good evening has been eroded as everyone seems to be working a conversation via their cell phone or looking down at email. Today's world of people walking with their heads down on the street, heads down in elevators, heads down in offices, even heads down in a church pew, and not because they're praying, because they're texting. The brain's pause and contemplative thought functions have been degraded and exist like abandoned and rusty railroad tracks. The brain has replaced these two elements with a reflective response mechanism from the unconscious and unfiltered mind. Such is the mind, in my opinion, of the President of the United States, Donald Trump, and his penchant for Twitter, television, and newspapers. His thinking, like the bulk of American citizenry, is limited to 150 characters a thought. Producing 150 characters in is an exhaustive effort for most people these days. No doubt a student has been assigned to describe the novel War and Peace in 150 characters. Tell us what is unique about your life in 150 characters, not more. I don't write short articles. I don't write short books. I refuse to. And I actually let go of an agent in a major agency because they said they will only take shorter scripts. And I say, but if the message has to be longer, then it will be longer. And they'll say, well, no one's interested in that. I say, it's not true. 5% of the public is, and 5% of the public is still 18 million people. As evidenced recently when I premiered my newest book, and it rated from a 0, which is terrible, to a 5, which is a blockbuster, 5++, which was unprecedented at the PBS station where it aired. Now it's running all over the country. And it's not a big book, but it's the smallest book I could do, 440 pages. And people who want information want quality, in-depth information. And the people who do not want quality information cannot be bothered with it. Then it doesn't matter how short something is. It's not going to help them. Do you really think that being flooded with millions, hundreds of millions of bits of information will make a difference? If anything, it doesn't. No, we need to bring back scholarship, and those of us who are communicators whatever form our communication takes, we should not compromise to the standards of the community. That's why I rarely can sit through a Broadway show. I refuse to sit through anything in Las Vegas. And I can't watch television, with rare exception, because of this. I don't believe that I am an exception. I believe a lot of people refuse to degrade their own intellectual capacities, their own sense of reason, their own desire for a deeper meaning because of what is considered current acceptable pop culture. When in falling asleep or in your dreams, you see text scrolling vertically, horizontally, and you can read some of it or observe images of computer screens with data displayed, which you cannot interpret, your brain and you have been altered. And when you notice that these images start to appear in your reoccurring dreams and it seems to be altering your deepest consciousness, it is probably time to seek shelter from the digital storm. Now think about that. Turn off the computers. Don't use the cell phone. Don't use the texting. And for a moment in your life, know what it's like for a heroin addict to give cold turkey to the addiction. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
You need some water. If you're thirsting for the sea, take my ocean full of teas and unmixed happiness, and I will hope that we can swim.
For all of you who are joining us today, I thank you for coming on board. I'm going to take just a moment because I was asked by my New York office, I'm not in the city, to offer you one tremendous saving on two of our very best-selling products, which we have back in stock. And by the way, for 3 years, we've had a lot of challenges keeping our inventory in stock because our manufacturer continued to run short. We have now a new manufacturer, and it'll take about 8 weeks for the transition, and then we will have nothing ever again out of stock. We're back in now. The special that we have today, ready to ship. And by the way, Harry is doing such a good job in our office. He's up to date. Orders placed yesterday were shipped today. So no delays either. We changed that system. So here's our two specials. And you talk about good specials, green stuff and grape stuff. Green stuff. This was my first product that I created, and it was a terrific product. And when people think about green stuff, well, what are you getting in a green stuff? Why should I have green stuff? Why should I have a grape stuff? What's in it? Why is it important for my overall good health? Well, what you can do easily and simply, you can Google all the ingredients that you find in that, and you'll see why I put them in there. For example, I'll give you grape stuff because I rarely talk about grape stuff, and I don't have a lot of time for this right now, but I want to give you the advantage of having a great savings. For the grape stuff, you're getting I'll give you the green stuff first. You're getting the best of the best of what people don't eat every day that I believe you should have in your body. The first ingredient, which means it's the greatest concentration, is organic kale. Now, you might have heard of kale chips, which are dried and seasoned. That's good for you. But the kale powder is far more concentrated because we had to juice it and then remove 98% of the water, so you're left with the concentrate, so it's a whole lot of concentrated kale and all the nutrients in kale, which is a cruciferous vegetable. Organic barley grass. Now, no one that I know has ever eaten organic barley grass. Livestock do, and if the grass continues to grow, it grows from a sprout, which is the barley greens, into a full barley, and which is a grain, but this is not a grain yet. so there's no gluten. So, but it's extremely rich in phytonutrients, chlorophyll, antioxidants. Then spinach and parsley and carrots and a superstar oat beta glucan, asparagus, and then the single-cell algae spirulina. In fact, spirulina had its big heyday back in the 1970s. It was the product, the super. It was the first of the single superstar products that people had, the superfoods. Well, we have it in here, and we have celery and onions and cauliflower and cabbage and broccoli and radishes and broccoli sprouts. If you just Google broccoli sprouts, you would see all these studies on what that does in your body. Collard greens, something I ate growing up in the South, not in the North. They don't have it up here or in the West, but down South they do. Apples and stevia with a pineapple flavor. And that's it. It only has 60 calories. It's great for diabetics or people who are concerned about your blood sugar because it won't spike it. So this floods your body, absolutely floods it, with all of the very powerful and important phytonutrients, cruciferous nutrients, chlorophylls. It's terrific. This is the current green stuff. So you're getting that. You're also getting the grape stuff. And grape stuff has itself. I've always said, and I absolutely believe, that one of the 10 best foods you can ever take in your body are grapes. So here we give you 10 grams of high-quality fiber. You're getting grape seed, which people generally never eat. They eat seedless grapes, but it's the seed you need and the skin you need. So we give you grape skin and grape seed. We give you the whole grape powder and resveratrol. Now, resveratrol, if you Googled resveratrol, R-E-S-V-E-R-A-T-R-O-L, you're going to see all the stuff it does, and immediately you're going to say, wow, why am I not taking that? I need that. My body needs it. My brain needs that. Apple fiber, flax seed, probiotics, oats, and vitamin C. Also cranberries, red beets, and stevia, and natural grape flavor. So it just doesn't get any better. Every day I make sure that I have my grape stuff. Now I'm going to be doing traveling to several other countries, and I cannot always find food. In some places, I can't find food at all that I can eat. So I always take plastic bags with the label on the outside in case they want to see what's in it. But I take my grape stuff, greens and grains, mussel stuff, cruciferous stuff. But I never miss my grape stuff and green stuff. You can combine them together. You can also do this. You can put grape stuff in, and it's a powder, and delicious powder. And what I did last week is I took some grape stuff and I put some spring water in it. You could also use apple juice. And then I poured it into ice cube trays and made ice cubes. When I finish my run, I throw a bunch of those grape ice cubes into a blender with a little lemon juice and liquefy it. And it just immediately soothes your need for rehydration and all those electrolytes. But boy, you talk about a superstar food. Grapes are it. So grape stuff and green stuff. I'm going to give you the number to call in a moment here. So I want you to realize the big discount you're getting. And we're talking about a very large discount. This would normally be $189.99 or $190. You're paying today only $119.99. That's a huge savings, huge. So here is this sell price number. Call this number and get your green stuff and greens and grains, and it'll be shipped out immediately. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065, because your body deserves the nutrients that's going to be flooding it. Your brain, your heart, your muscles, your lung, they're all going to have these nutrients, natural and whole nutrients, into your system. When I did not have a chance to see the President's State of the Union speech, I have not spoken with anyone who has. But I do know from his recent statements that, intentionally or not, he is acting very similarly to Mussolini in the 1920s and the beginning of fascism in Europe that would then be emulated in Germany by young Adolf Hitler. And long before 1938, 39, 40, in the gas chambers and the concentration camps and Auschwitz, there was the early propaganda. There was the exclusion of the media. There was the denigration of unique groups. There was the hatred of different people based upon their genetics and the color of their skin and their natural heritage, their ethnicity. And the White Helmets were given an Academy Award. They're being praised. On Democracy Now! They were praised. Well, we have a different perspective because we did some real deep research. And here are people from researchers who went to Syria who look for the truth, and here's what they have to say. This is Crosstalk about the White Helmets.
Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The White Helmets, a heartfelt humanitarian NGO, or an elaborate and cynical Western PR stunt promoting illegal regime change in Syria? Does the wearing of white helmets mean they're the good guys supporting a just cause? To Crosstalk the White Helmets, I'm joined by my guest, Vanessa Beely in Bordeaux. She's an independent investigative journalist and photographer. In Beirut, we have Eva Bartlett. She's an independent writer and justice activist with extensive experience in the Gaza Strip. And in Phoenix, we cross to Patrick Henningsen. He is a journalist, writer, and founder of the news website 21stCenturyWire.com. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I very much appreciate it. Vanessa, if I can go to you first. From what I understand, you were in Syria 4 weeks ago. Who are the White Helmets? Some call them a heroic NGO, seen to be on cable TV now. Others call the White Helmets Al-Qaeda with a facelift. Go ahead.
Yeah, I had a very interesting 4 weeks in Syria, including some time spent in West Aleppo. Let's have a look, first of all, at the concept of the White Helmets. They claim that they are they're an NGO. They're not funded by any governments, particularly by governments that have a vested interest in the conflict in Syria. That's the number one lie. They receive probably in the region of conservatively $100 million. Primary funder is the UK Foreign Office. Followed by the United States via USAID, which we know from their history to be very much connected to deep state in America and an outreach agent for CIA infiltration into target nations. So that's the first black mark against the White Helmets.
Patrick in Phoenix, I mean, where do these White Helmets operate? From what I understand, they operate where rebel groups, terrorist groups are in operation, and they can move around seamlessly in this chaotic environment that we're all told is so chaotic, with bombs dropping all over the place. I mean, they find themselves in a very convenient situation, I would say.
Well, that's precisely the problem. Apparently, they operate exclusively in what one might call rebel-held areas, but in reality are terrorist-held areas in Syria, namely places like Idlib and also East Aleppo and in pockets of the outskirts of Damascus and so forth. This is what we're told. But the reality, when you actually research the organization, you find that their base of operations really is in Gaznia in Turkey. And if you know this city and you understand, there's a number of organizations that are based there, and many of whom are affiliated with what's going on in Syria on the rebel side, and some might say on the terrorist side as well. So that's a very important base in Turkey. So what this organization is, essentially, this is smart power. This is the latest version of smart power. In the NGO, the human rights industry, this is the the most advanced version we've seen so far. So if you remember back to the Iraq War and the Jessica Lynch story and how that was used in kind of mythology in order to sort of back the war effort and the Kuwaits and babies and incubators and also the Dusty Boy from Aleppo a couple of months ago, the poster child of the responsibility to protect. The White Helmets are essentially being paid by the U.S., the U.K., by the EU, by a number of these host nations, and then they're producing imagery that's being sent back through U.S. media in order to sell the intervention effort, the humanitarian intervention effort, and the need to protect the poor people.
Okay, Eva, explain to me and our viewers here from, you know, from what I understand, they say they are nonpartisan, they are non-political, and maybe, I don't know because I can't say for sure, maybe they do save some people here. But at the same time, they're calling for a no-fly zone, the overthrow of the government, the legal government in Damascus here. I mean, how can you be an NGO helping people, saving babies, and demanding airstrikes? There's a contradiction there.
Absolutely. They don't represent the will of the Syrian people. Certainly, Syrians, by and large, want the war on Syria to end. They want to return to peace. For White Helmets to be working, as mentioned, in al-Nusra areas of Idlib and Aleppo, to actually be seen in many photographs holding weapons and participating in acts of terrorism, this alone makes them not neutral. But absolutely, you cannot be a neutral body and be calling for a no-fly zone, which would mean the decimation of Syria. Absolutely not. And the White Helmets, you would notice, would never be in areas that are actually severely being attacked, like Fou and Kafadia, by al-Nusra, by Ahrar al-Sham. You would never see any rescuers there because these are genuine situations where people are being killed. And obviously, the White Helmets exist as a group that is merely propagating this myth that the Syrian army is killing its own people.
Vanessa, I find this phenomenon of the White Helmets absolutely fascinating because it is the way to sell regime change. Regime change light, okay, with saccharin. Look at these heroic men doing this, heroic acts. And at the same time, because the way Western media, if you read Western media carefully, you even if you're not, you know, a biased or partisan, you can start seeing the contradictions coming out. Secretary Kerry saying these very bizarre things about international law. But if you throw the White Helmets out there, oh my goodness, we're doing a great thing and we have to help these guys. This is a better way to sell this war, and that's why they're being pushed so much. That's my theory. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you're definitely seeing is very much what happened in Iraq, is the stealth eradication of the Syrian state and the Syrian state institutions. And the White Helmets are a huge part of this. If we look again at the funding, conservatively 100 million going into an organization of 3,000 operatives. As actually, just to go back to what Eva said as well about Kafra'i and Fua, these so-called neutral, impartial operatives funded by the US coalition fundamentally, that is, has a heavily vested interest in regime change in Syria. During the Madaya crisis, or the manufactured Madaya crisis, they were seen holding up banners calling for the devastation and destruction of Kafra'i and Fua, the two Idlib villages that Eva just mentioned. But very quickly, it's very important at this point to point out their role in shadow state building by intelligence, British intelligence, and by U.S. intelligence. There is an existing Syria civil defense. It was created in 1953. It was a founder member of the ICDO, the International Civil Defense Organization. And just to give you a very brief update on what happened yesterday, we discovered yesterday that the ICDO website link to the Syrian Arab Republic Syria civil defense had been infiltrated, let's say, and the link was in fact linking to the White Helmets website. Now, that wasn't like that about a week ago. So after various emails and phone calls to the ICDO, I managed to speak to them this morning. And in fact, the person that I spoke to appeared to be horrified. He said it was an administration mistake, and they admitted to me that the white helmets are not recognized by the ICDO. They're not recognized by the UN as a civil defense organization. The only recognized organization inside Syria is the Syria civil defense, the real Syria civil defense. So not only are the white helmets questionable on their funding and on their independence, and they're trained in Turkey, not in Syria. They're embedded in Nusra Front and ISIS-held areas and various other brigades of terrorists under various names. They're also now proven to be attempting to usurp the existence of the real Syria civil defense. And through the testimony of the real Syria civil defense that I spoke to, the crews in various governorates in Syria, they not only usurped them, they killed them when they took over the centers, the real Syria civil defense centers in Deir ez-Zor, in Raqqa, in Idlib, in East Aleppo, and they stole their equipment.
You know, Patrick, one of the things I understand is the white helmets, they don't want to deal with any government instrument or organization or individuals in Syria whatsoever, but they're supposed to be a humanitarian thing. I mean, isn't that beyond ideology here? But apparently they go on their own. From the videos I've seen on in social media, which I take with a grain of salt very often, okay, but nonetheless I'll mention it, is that some of them are carrying arms, and they just seem so convenient there when something happens, which should make anyone suspicious.
I showed these videos to a U.S. Marine, and the first thing he said to me, he said, do they only rescue little girls and children? How come they never rescue any adults? Common sense question. But you can lay the blame of most of this at the feet of the media, and specifically the U.S. media and the U.K. and the European media. They don't check. None of this is verified. Not one of these photographs or videos is verified. Where's the location? What time of day? Was this indeed correlating with an actual airstrike by Syria or Russia? No checking at all goes into this. So previously we had CNN will fabricate a war scene. We saw this in the first Gulf War. This is provable. We also saw this with Danny Dimes in Syria, and were staging sort of scenes of bombings and wars and putting it out as real news. Al Jazeera has also been caught doing this in the past. So this wag the dog phenomenon with the media, now the media doesn't have to do it. This pseudo NGO is producing that same imagery now, and it's somehow presented to the public as authentic through the mainstream media in the West, and not one bit of verification, no due diligence whatsoever. Editors literally pick up the material provided to them by this US, UK, European-backed NGO, and they run it on the front page without any questions. And there's your headlines, there's your story. And then the public have this sort of synthetic outrage as a result, and it's sacrosanct. It's sacrosanct, you can't question it. It's all about the children and saving Aleppo and so forth. This is how the campaign's being run.
All right, I'm gonna jump in here. We're gonna go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion.
Okay, there you have it. Real journalist, not affiliated with the mainstream or alternative media, in the war zones, interviewing civilians and interviewing people with the white helmets, interviewing the real Syrian civil defense team, and showing that this is all propaganda, backed by $100 million a year. They're trained out of Turkey, the second largest sponsor of terrorism, training of al-Nusra and al-Qaeda and ISIS in the Middle East behind Saudi Arabia. One of the problems we have in our society is differentiating a person with a nice personality, a pleasant smile, a congenial attitude, with tyrannical and almost, if not sociopathic, tendencies. And that's what we had with Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. Separate out what they said and what they promised with what they've actually done. And even when you look at when he was running for office, he promised universal health care. Where was the outrage among the Democrats when they had control and they could have passed universal health care? Now's when we need it. But with Donald Trump, you're dealing with a different character. and you're dealing with a person who has no filter and no capacity for reason. And my concern is that one more step in the wrong direction and he will be labeled as a fascist. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.